Welcome to another podcast by Robin Bridges. My friend and colleague, Jenny Watts, is with me today. She is a fellow psychotherapist, fellowess psychotherapist, world dance teacher, and wonderful human being. And we seem to have a really blessed connection that we can discuss these items and feel so alive and inspired. And my hope is that as you listen to these podcast messages, you too will feel even more alive and even more inspired and know that you are joining us and we're joining you and we're all together. Even if you have some differing thoughts or viewpoints, everything is welcomed and everything is invited here. So, Jenny and I are up here on this beautiful hill outside of Bozeman, Montana, where we have both lived for many, many, many years.
Yes.
And welcome, Jenny. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of this conversation. It's very exciting. It's very exciting. And yeah, looking out over this valley that has grown so rapidly, so and without much forethought, I think it really fits with the topic that we thought we might explore today, which is civilization and where we are with civilization. And I love your suggested title, you know, Civilization is Crumbling, Embracing Next Steps, because that's a hard thing for me to do at being a native Montanan and having been just a year old when I came to the Gallatin Valley. It's painful for me to see the growth and the expansion and the urbanization of farmland. You know, we're sitting here on a lot that was once wide open farm. Yes. And ranch space, and now it's being broken up into these little lots for homes. So, I don't know. What do you want to... Where does that lead you?
Well, I wanted to say, and for myself, having lived here for 30 years, mm-hmm. Jenny has lived here for 60-some years, mm-hmm. so she's got me beat twice. but still, I figured after I'd lived here about 10 or 11 years, I was starting to buy my ticket to say, yes, I'm an adult Montana native. Mm-hmm. Now I very confidently say it because I've allowed, as I know you have, Jenny, I've allowed the land to inform me, change me, nurture me, mm-hmm. deepen me. And the changes have been from my more California, mm-hmm. born in Berkeley, lovely, creative, but very heavily populated civilization with all the Northern California mm-hmm. Generalizations you might want to make, that I came here when I was 23, 24, I tell people, well, California was great to grow up in, but I came to my senses and came to Montana. No disrespect for people who still love California and are there. Yes. It's a fabulous place. And every place has its light and dark, its shadow qualities and its benefits.
Gifts, yes.
Gifts, yeah. But when I came to the title for what I wanted to talk about today, Civilization is Crumbling, Embracing Next Steps, I do think, like so many things, it's a both and. It's, can we feel the grief and the sorrow, the disappointment and the difficulty when we realize, oh my God, civilization is truly crumbling worldwide. Uh-huh. The web has made that, and increasing media has made that completely apparent. And then can we also embrace the unknown and whatever our next steps involve? I mean, even if they were the end of our species, mm-hmm. you know, can we embrace? Can we, like this view on this beautiful autumn day where we see the mountains, they're all brown now because it's November in Montana. We are in a high arid desert. Mm-hmm. The kind of dusky blue sky moving mm-hmm. to deep blue up directly above us, the complete sunshine, the beautiful mountain ranges surrounding our valley, which mm-hmm. the tribes that used to be here called the Valley of Flowers, mm-hmm. you know, and the snow that's on the peaks.
Absolutely. And the fact that there's still, by most people's standards, we are rural and in wide open space. You know, really, as we look around, there are houses in the distance, but right around us, there's open grassland still.
So yeah. Where that is, that helps us naturally, I think, begin to get the larger picture. Mm-hmm. We can actually physically look down on this valley. We see all the trees and all the buildings and mm-hmm. all the new ones that we both are so sad about. We do not have embraced progress the way, embracing those next steps has mm-hmm. been very hard to do. But when I say embracing next steps, I'm more about embracing what we have to do as a result of the steps that have already taken that have been like the dumping ground of that crumbling of civilization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's where I take this.
And so maybe what to do in response or as an outgrowth of what has come before? Is that...
Say more about that?
When you say that the dumping ground, that already actions have occurred, so it's not about, oh, how do I feel about that, but rather how am I going to respond to mm-hmm. that? Is that more what you're talking
yes.
about?
Yes, thank mm-hmm. you, yep. Mm-hmm. Because we don't want to skip over the step of talking about and doing the grieving and the sorrow for toxic spills and overdevelopment of land and all of that, if that is our persuasion, which I know both you and I have mm-hmm. that particular persuasion. We don't want to skip over it. But on the other hand, if we linger too long, we run the risk of feeling victimized and then responding or reacting as victims, rather than as accepting actually our part as human beings mm-hmm. in all of this and moving beyond our individual likes, dislikes, political or personal persuasions to say, okay, this is what's happened. Now, where do we go from here? If what's happened isn't reflecting our deepest values and desires, how do we get to those? And of course, that involves politically coming to the peace table, everybody owning their own stuff, mm-hmm. ideally, right? Mm-hmm. That would be almost heaven on earth.
Exactly.
But I think that this disillusion, this phrase that came to me, disillusion is the revolution toward evolution.
Yes.
I think if there's a way we can look at the crumbling, not only the raping and pillaging of land, as if that weren't enough, but the raping and pillaging of people mm-hmm. and animals and the air and the waters. Mm-hmm. If we can look at all of that dissolution as contributing to the actual revolution, that then as we move through that and look ahead and embrace our next steps, leads us toward the evolution where we really... I believe when enough of us set our mindfulness towards that, we truly can evolve. Mm-hmm. But it's a matter of, opening our hearts and our minds and sitting with the unknown. I'm slowing down right now as we speak about this because I'm realizing when I want to sound like an authority and say, it's just a matter of, I find myself at this like pause, like the net opened up beneath me and there's a big hole in the net. And I was just sort of falling through it going, you know, oh my God, what is this really? How do we really accomplish that? But I think that admitting the unknowing and sitting together with the not knowing is what will actually, ironically, move us towards a knowing.
Mm-hmm. The thing that popped into my head, well, actually two phrases that of course you as a therapist and I have, as a therapist have probably used thousands of times with our clients, is trusting the process. And that's really partly what you're talking about, trusting that this is, that dissolution and revolution and evolution are a natural part of our world, that even though it's a man-made dissolving, a man-made catastrophe, that is part of natural processes. And we cannot escape that. We are part of a incredibly powerful, magnificent natural world, and to trust that we can move through this just as we do, just as all nature does. Mm. It's that, yeah. And the other phrase is grist for the mill, that, you know, that each experience, even the ones, and especially perhaps the ones that are hard or painful or remind us of how little control we have in our world, and yet, of course, what we discover is how much control we have in our world at the same time, that those, it's all part of our natural growth and learning and expansion, evolution.
The experience of the opposites. We really don't have control, and we do, you know, and how is it that we move through each of those phases and understand it is the both and. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Ram Dass, right, from his book entitled Grist for the Mill.
Right.
I also think of the medicine wheel with this, that
it takes
us from the beginnings in the East through the fullness in the South to the endings in the West to the teachings from the North. So there is dissolution in the West, where we look at everything we're ready to move through, to grieve and to release. And then the revolution, I think, is almost the walk between the place of the West on the medicine wheel and the place of the North. That's the revolutionary steps we take. So the evolution is when we get to the North and are willing to sit in the place of asking for help from the ancestors, from spirit guides, from animal totems, from the elements, earth, air, fire, and water, from everything that lives, which is pretty much everything in the world.
Mm-hmm. And beyond, yes.
And beyond, yeah, yeah.
And that's, and asking for help from one another. And we were talking earlier today, before we began the podcast, about when we choose to sit with our struggle and when we choose to reach out, and that reaching out is an important part of the process as well. Yeah.
Well, I think the more we realize we really are all in this together and can move from separation to unification, we get that our unification is always in our commonalities. And when we can get to the commonalities, we can still honor the differences, which is part of that separation. But to bridge a stronger road to the commonalities, because that's what we certainly need today.
Exactly.
That's what true peace tables are always efforting.
Right.
Right.
And
to find.
That's a perfect segue into that next little phrase that you came up with in thinking about this topic, which is, you know, from patriarchy to matriarchy to the new us. Would you talk a little bit more about that? Because that's seems to fit.
You know, I think that's true. The patriarchy, I believe, is dissolving, and I think many people would agree with me. All the old institutions and the linear, ordered, insistent way of being, separate and divorced from the softer, informative, intuitive feeding of the divine feminine in men and women.
Uh-huh.
So we're talking about the patriarchy in men and in women.
Uh-huh.
We're not male bashing. But it's that it may be carried more by men right now, which it seems to be, you know, in terms of obvious things like wage discrepancies and opportunity discrepancies for women, and even
politics,
right to vote or lack in many countries, and all kinds of horrible mutilations that still go on for women in other countries. That is crumbling. And I think we see that through the disorder and the chaos that's happening. That's a building's coming down, and there's going to be a lot of rubble and confusion and chaos and anger, and people are going to be projecting out all their anxiety and unfinished stuff on other people. And I think as therapists, that's why we have so been dedicated and happy to be dedicated to the progression of our own inner marriage between patriarchy and matriarchy, as well as that in other people. So my feeling is that the matriarchy, which was very round, inclusive, intuitive, and in its light side, right? Gentle and visionary, that used to run things thousands of years ago, and then has morphed in the last 2,000 to 3,000 years, maybe about 3,000, into the patriarchy, and now that is, in my mind, clearly crumbling. Matthew Fox writes beautifully about all this, by the way. Many of you may know and love him, as I do. As that's shifting, we don't need it to just, like, turn back again to the matriarchy, because that would be just as much of a mistake. Mm-hmm. We need both, because both the masculine and the feminine in their light, meaning positive qualities.
Mm-hmm. Constructive.
Constructive, mm-hmm. helpful, mm-hmm. yeah.
Creative. Mm-hmm.
They're beautiful, aren't they? Beautiful.
Yes.
And we make these generalizations not to limit our thought, but to give focus to what we're trying to express.
Yeah.
So if the masculine is the more the doing and the acting, doesn't it want really a sense of the feminine to be saying, oh, I've intuited this, let's do that, this is what I desire? And the masculine says within any given person, oh, great, I heard that, you communicated that to me, you bet, I'll go out and do that.
Mm-hmm.
So like for myself, if I'm doing a project, my inner, what I would call feminine, is like with the beloved all the time in communion, right? With God and goddess, however you want to say that.
Divine.
The divine, the all that is, creative spark. And I say, oh, I've got this wonderful idea, right? And I want to bring that into form. And in my mind, then, when the kind of like my CD, The Return of the Sacred Feminine, was also speaking about.
Yes.
When the inner feminine is in communion with the inner masculine, he hears what she's saying and he says, oh, that sounds great. I know how to go out and do that. He's going to take action. He's going to be ordered. He's going to be logical and sequential. He's going to get that puppy done,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then they're both happy. And it's not that the masculine doesn't have ideas of his own. He can be very instrumental along the way in saying, oh, I think we ought to tweak this or that would work differently. But I think it would also help reduce homophobia in general to realize that men really get to have the complete feminine in their lives, which I do think a lot of men, and I don't want to generalize too much about what type of men, so I'll just say a lot of men do understand that already.
Mm-hmm.
They are not threatened by the inner feminine.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think they're going to be overwhelmed by it or destroyed by it. They celebrate it.
Yes.
And if more men could do that, then I think they would be listening to their own inner feminine, and then men would actually have a better and deeper dialogue with their women.
Uh-huh.
And I think the women already, because we're living in a patriarchy, we've already had to be tuned to the masculine, tuned to the masculine. What does the masculine want? How can we help provide that? And recognizing we get to move from being servers of the masculine vision to being initiators, and then hoping we get to hook up with men who also are happy to listen to and acknowledge and honor our tremendous power and wisdom that we are gaining in as a species, I think, as I call women one species and men sometimes, that we are really, our gender is really manifesting so much of that now.
And I think we've had the freedom to do that. I think in many ways, the women's movement, you know, has really allowed us to be much more flexible and much more able to express both masculine and feminine energy. And
absolutely.
And so I would say that our species, our feminine species, has had that opportunity certainly more than the male.
Absolutely. And once again, our ancestors, those on the other side as well as those still on this side, human beings, mostly women, but some men very, very strong in the women's movement also.
Yeah.
Thank you to each of you. There's so many names to list to express our appreciation, gratitude, and realize we're doing is standing on the shoulders of those who have come before us. That's all it is.
Yep.
We just build upon that. So I think that's what we are moving towards, is the new us.
And I love that phrase, the new us, and that sense of that we are all in this together, as you mentioned earlier, that this isn't a path that we need to take or are designed to take as isolated individuals.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful thing, isn't it? It's just like I know Jenny, you and I have talked before about how We don't heal alone, and we aren't designed to. We are not designed to be so self-sufficient that we do it all alone, because that exacerbates our separateness.
Yeah.
We have enough separateness.
Yes.
We need to maintain and honor a certain degree of separateness, as we've spoken about before, for ego. But we have to hook up with the other part of ourselves, the masculine, the feminine, the masculine, so that we can live rounded experiences, not only within ourselves, but without.
Yes, in our civilization.
Yeah,
in our culture, in our lives.
In our personal, in our intimate relationships, in our friendships, in our communities, in our villages, and globally.
Yes.
Which is, I think, what we're all headed towards.
Our global village.
Our global village.
Is there anything else that you want to say about the topic today?
I think I'm good for now. How about you?
I think I'm ready to enjoy the gorgeous sunshine.
And I have to say, what's been so fascinating, just as we're wrapping up here, I had the most bizarre, I've got chills from it, experience, in a good way bizarre. I thought there was a deer thundering across just a few yards down from this lovely little hillside we're sitting on, going from south to north. I don't know quite what that means regarding our podcast today, but it was just running along like full of life and beautiful, and its little hooves were pounding along on the ground, and I could almost feel the vibration. So I think about deer energy and what that means. And what does deer energy mean to you?
I think of deer as kind of from my Celtic, my neo-Celtic beliefs, as being associated with earth, and that the stag in particular is that masculine energy, that action-oriented, powerful, wild, alive energy of earth. And yet there is very much a feminine grace and softness to all, to deer. They seem like such delicate creatures. And so I think that that's very interesting, that it seems like a wonderful embodiment of the new us.
Beautiful. Thank you for listening to us today. From us to you, may you have good days and always be naturally inspired.